The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha. Homage to the Dharma. Homage to the Sangha. So thank you all for coming on this warm summer morning. And my thanks to Reverend Master Mayon for asking me to offer the Dharma. And my thanks, as always, to Reverend Master Jiyu for the fact that I'm here at all. So thank you all. So I wanted to talk a little bit this morning about when, you know, when we do the lecture verse, which we've just done, and we say, I vow to make the truth one with myself. So what does myself mean? And if we're working in Buddhism to not have a self, what is there to be one with? And I was thinking about the oneness and et cetera. And then I realized that it's a question of coming unstuck. And what brought that home to me was I found a nice little basket at the thrift store recently, you know, the kind of little small basket you'd have on your desk for pencils and pens or notepaper, and 25 cents, I thought I could afford that on a monk's wages. So I bought it, and then I got it back to the monastery, and I found that in the bottom of it, there was this really dark brown sticky substance, you know, about the 2 inches by an inch. And I thought, well, that's no problem. So I poured alcohol on it, and it didn't do anything. And I poured hydrogen peroxide on it, and that didn't do anything. And I poured acetone on it, and that didn't do anything. And I was about to go for the goo gone, but that was over in the laundry. And then I realized that right in front of me in the bathroom was a bottle of white vinegar. And I thought, oh, I'll just try that. And if that doesn't work, I'll add some baking soda. So I let the white vinegar soak, and then I used a little cuticle thing, which I don't use anymore, to push and pull. And eventually it all came clear. And so there's this wonderful, pristine little basket, thanks to the white vinegar. And I thought, isn't that interesting? Because with all the things that are out there, it was the most mundane household item, easily accessible, that dissolved all this gooey mess. And it brought up for me an incident that happened to me at the Hermitage and that actually brought me to this Dharma talk. So I'll, without describing it in all the gory details, but for those of you that are here in the hall, you may have noticed I have this interesting little brace on my hand. And if it had been 3 weeks ago, I would have had this wonderful, as some of you will remember, turquoise blue flashy cast all the way from just below my knuckles up to the elbow. And previous to that, I had a cast back past the elbow. And the reason was that I was at our wonderful Compassionate Friend Hermitage in Scott Valley, where you can feel like you're 40 miles from nowhere. And there was a power outage for the whole area, Callahan through Wairika. And I called Pacific Power. It's area-wide. It'll be after midnight. I thought, okay. So I went to bed, taking 2 extra flashlights with me upstairs into the bedroom. But during the night, when I got up, did I think about picking up one of the flashlights? No, because you're so much in the habit of just getting out of bed, going to the loo, going back to bed. So I got up and I went to the loo and I went back, but I didn't go back to bed. There was this vacant space when I put out my hand, and the next thing I knew, I was on the floor somewhere in excruciating pain in pitch darkness. And as one of our congregation members who's a physical therapist told me, what I had done was execute a wonderful foosh. It means fell on outstretched wrist. So you fall down like that, and you break both the ulna and the radial bone. Well, I've had hip fractures, and I've had hip replacements, and I've had shoulder fractures, and I've had ankle fractures. This was the most excruciating fracture, the most excruciating pain I've ever imagined. You're in the pitch dark, and I actually didn't know where I was. I couldn't move to tell whether the chair was on that side and the bed is over there. All I knew was that I was in pain and it was dark. Well, eventually what happened is I managed to get out of that position and up onto the bed. And I thought, do I call the Abbey now at whatever time it is? It's not life-threatening. No. So I spent the night going back and forth, I now realize, between fear and desire. It was the fear of what has happened. And I knew a little bit about anatomy, so it's pretty certain I knew that, but I didn't know what else was going to happen. There was this great amorphous fear, and combined with that was the desire to go back in time and not have it happen. And I knew that wasn't going to happen. I knew that was a foolish desire, but it kept coming up. Why didn't I pick up a flashlight? Why didn't I do this? Why didn't I do that? And I thought, you know, this is not the first time in my life that I've had the thought, why didn't I do that, or why did I do that? So it occurred to me that the fear and the desire were not new. They were just kind of embedded there. And that was all the self was for that period of time. And eventually, during that night, every once in a while, for little brief moments of time, there would be complete ease and calm. And I thought, how is that possible? How is that possible? Because the minute that I moved, you know, the wrist said, oh no, don't do that. And I realized that some of it is that after years and years of practice, even if we don't sense it with our mind and our brain, our body and our heart, our Buddha nature accepts the fact that this is the way it is. This is what's happening in the moment. And there's this wonderful, complete acceptance. Part of it probably helped by I didn't have any other choice. And there you are. And you just simply accept whatever's happening to you. And once I realized that was the only option open, then I could extend some sympathy towards this poor, you know, elderly and now broken wrist and forearm that was in a lot of pain. And I found myself as much as possible saying to my arm and my wrist that I was sorry that I had done that. I was sorry it happened. I would do what I could. I would take care of it. And I think all of that kind of allowed the fear and the desire to float away. And on the practical side of it, the next morning I called the Abbey, and a kind monk came out and spent the whole day, collected me up, went to the Fairchild ER in Wairika, met very, very kind and competent doctors and nurses, who did a closed reduction and put on a big cast and went back to the hermitage. And I kept saying, I'll be fine, I'll be fine. And the monk said, maybe you should come back to the Abbey. And I thought later, isn't it funny how the self just says, oh no, we're fine. I mean, we can't cook or open doors by ourselves or whatever, but we'll be okay out in, you know, the wilderness. But I got convinced to come back, and so I did, and obviously all the monks took very, very good care of me. Well, that was June 18th when that happened, so it's been about 8 weeks ago. And I've had a lot of time because I can't do, that's the key word, do the usual things that I can do. And so I've had a lot of time to sit and reflect, do some reading that I hadn't done before, and just reflect on what really happened while I was out at the Hermitage and when that happened. And two things came to mind. One, Reverend Master Jiyu had often said, nothing happens by accident. And although we think, oh, that was an accident, you know, Scholastica tripped and fell, and yet actually, was it? Because it could have been prevented, but whether it was or not, it was unexpected. So let's use the word unexpected. She would say nothing happens by accident. And the other thing that she would say is, look at everything that happens to you as a gift. Well, I can tell you that neither of those thoughts came to me that night. As I say, all that came to me was pain and fear and desire, but with some acceptance interwoven there. But when I looked back on it during the last 8 weeks, I thought, what can I learn from this? What is there in this experience? What's the gift in this experience that's being given to me? And some of the things, of course, that came up, as any of you that have had injuries or illnesses know, is not only acceptance, this is the way it is, and I can't get my watch off with my other hand, which I can do now, but I found I could do it with my left great toe if I could flex my knee enough, so that was helpful. I also found I couldn't floss my teeth. Try flossing your teeth with one hand, and, you know, so a monk got me these wonderful little placards. So you have to accept your situation and recognize that I can't do everything I'm accustomed to do or everything I want to do, but I can accept the help of other people. I can be creative. You know, they talk about thinking out of the box. Okay, I'll think out of the box. You know, how can I get dressed? How can I get my robe on? And yet, if you're willing to just sit and say, what is good to do here, the answer will come. Maybe you can do it yourself in a different way. Maybe you have to ask for help, and you have to be willing to have someone else do something for you. So that went on for a while. I still can't floss my teeth, but I can get dressed. So things are improving and coming along. And I realized as part of that, that doing, being able to do, was not the reason that I'm here in this monastery. It wasn't the reason I'm a monk. It was being, not doing. And when you're involuntarily having to sit and contemplate and reflect a lot, that is easier to accept because there are things you can't do, and doing takes a lesser place. What also came up was the need for patience. Patience. I've always been impressed that the Buddha said, patience is the highest virtue. I never thought of myself as virtuous, but I did exercise a lot of patience, and I have learned a lot about patience. And one of the things that came up for me was, if I can't do and I'm being, then what is it that I'm taking refuge in? Because part, I think, of what both as monks and as people living in the world, you know, are the self, the identity, has to do with doing, right? That's who we are, what we do. Well, when you can't do, that kind of blows it, you know? It just kind of fades off into the distance. And I thought, well, I can't take refuge in typing quick emails because I can't type anymore. I can sort of type with one finger. It's very arduous. And I went through all this list of the things that I'm accustomed to taking refuge in to say that, you know, I'm a good monk, I'm a good person, etc., etc., etc. And then you all will think, gosh, how long is it going to take her to figure this out? And then I thought, but what about our three refuges? What about Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha? And I was sitting there and I was thinking about all the different ways. I started writing them down. You know, at the end of the verse, we said homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. How many ways can you say that? I give homage to the Buddha. I give homage to the Dharma. I give homage to the Sangha. That's nice. I offer homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. And I went through that. And then I got to my refuge is the Buddha. My refuge is the Dharma. My refuge is the Sangha. And I thought, well, granted there isn't any my, because there isn't any self, but you have to start somewhere, and all we have are words. If Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha are my true refuge, how can I really take refuge in them? Here I am, what can I do? And then what came up for me is, well, there are the three pure precepts, aren't there? There is the cease from evil, do only good, and do good for others. And I remember that Reverend Master Jiyu, something else that she had said very long ago, I remember this from being a layperson. That's been a while ago. That's been 27, 28, 29 years ago. And she said that all of the precepts, and I don't know that these are her exact words, but that all of the precepts kind of telescope into the three pure precepts. And I didn't understand that because certainly then I thought, I don't do evil. What is the cease from evil business? And even now, you know, I think about evil and I think about bombings and terrorist attacks and domestic violence and all the other things that we read about and hear about. I'm not doing any of that, so where am I with that precept? And then I thought, as some of us ex-grad students do, you go to your dictionary and you look up what the word means. Well, here's some interesting things about evil. Morally bad or wrong, harmful or injurious, something that is misfortune, destruction, or suffering. And I thought, aha, suffering. There's a word I'm familiar with. I'm a good Buddhist. I know that word, suffering. That's the key word for evil. And when I sat and thought about it and contemplated it, I thought, really, evil is something that causes karma. Something that causes, quote, bad karma. And I use that word, you know, a little hesitantly with quotes around it. So that if I expand my definition of evil to include something that's harmful or injurious, something that causes suffering, then I can look at every single moment in my daily life and say, what evil am I committing right now? What have I said to someone that's hurtful? What have I said to someone that may stick with them for a long time because it was critical and it touched a little sore point for them? And I think the reverse side of that is if I want to cease from evil, then I have to do good. And that's the second pure precept, do only good. And so what does that mean? Well, you know, when I lived in the world, it meant doing charitable acts and participating in social justice issues and all those other good, in quotes, things. And yet, I remembered that Reverend Master Jiyu had a definition of good that was different than mine. And I want to read you a couple of paragraphs from the Kyoju Kaiman, because she talks at length in here about the three pure precepts, as she does about all the other precepts. So let me see if I can find this. And I wanted to go back a second to to the cease from evil, and read what she has to say. And this is under the three pure precepts. This is under cease from evil. Cease from evil is absolute in thought, in word, in deed, in body, in spirit. All are bound by the law of karma. Do not doubt this. You will pay for everything you do if you do not cut the roots now and live by fully digested perceptual truth. Do not worry about the karma of others. Each person, his karma makes, his or her makes. Each man and woman, his or her karma makes, we'll put it that way. And when I, again, when I had, and this is the copy of the Kyoju Kaimen that still has Louise Hicks written in it, and then I crossed that out and I put Ho'un Scholastica. So I've had this for a long, long time. And again, when I first read that, I thought, okay, so it's absolute and I don't commit evil. But I read it today, and it has a whole different meaning for me. As does do only good. And this is what she has to say about that. And she talks about asking, that we have to be willing to ask, what is good, in quotes, to do here? And that's what I found myself doing out there when I finally got up off of the floor and got into the bed, and I thought, okay, so I know I can move, and what's good to do here? And I was asking, both on a practical sense, should I call the Abbey? Should I go downstairs, try to call 911? What should I do? But also, what's good for me as a monk to do here? How can I look at this? And this is what Rinpoche Master Gyu's commentary is, and this is just a real small part of it. Please teach me that which it is good for me to do this day. Please show me that which it is good for me to teach this day. Please give me the certainty that I teach the truth and know indeed that when the still small voice within my mind and heart says yes, I must obey that teaching, and when it says no, I must not disobey that teaching. Well, the basis for all of that is asking and also accepting the fact that whatever we do teaches others. We don't have to be teachers in either the monastic or the lay sense of the word. Whatever you do, if you go out in the world and you're grumpy and frowning, it's going to have a different effect on people than if you're smiling and you say thank you. That sounds pretty simplistic, doesn't it? It's really profound. Think about it. It's really, really profound. So we have to look at good in a religious sense, in a Buddhist sense. And I thought, okay, what does my trusty dictionary have to say? Is it going to help me? Well, it did, because it pointed me to Reverend Master Gyu, and this is why. Because when I looked it up, it said better, best, beneficial, genuine, virtuous, benevolent, kind, and goodness. And I thought, gee, there's Dogen, there's Reverend Master Gyu, right there in the dictionary under what's good. Because Dogen, of course, talks about a lot about benevolence. And Reverend Master Gyu, as many of you will remember, would often say, and it's in her books, do the best you can. It doesn't mean do it perfectly. It means do the best you can. And the foundation for doing the best we can is our meditation and our precepts. So when we think about ceasing from evil, the next we think about doing only good. And then, of course, comes the clincher, do good for others. Do good for others. And again, well, how do we do that? How do we do that? I think it's by putting the self aside. And that's where the solvent, K came in, because I thought, how do you dissolve the self? Wouldn't that be nice? Could just pour white vinegar all over myself. And then I could walk away, and there'd just be a blob of Buddha nature, and there wouldn't be any self there. I like white vinegar. I think it has a lot of uses. It's not going to work that way. So the solvent that we need to dissolve the self so that we can truly do good for others, what do you think it is? It's the three pure precepts. And when you think about it, cease from evil is the Buddha. The Buddha within us is saying, cease from evil. Do only good is the Dharma. That's the teaching of all the Dharma, the trees and the rocks and the fences and the scriptures and the Dharma talks and everything else is do only good. And then there's the Sangha, do good for others. So we don't separate the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha from the three pure precepts, the three refuges, three pure precepts. All the precepts come together for us when we're still enough, whether we do it deliberately or circumstantially, and we have time to contemplate and reflect. There were, when I was thinking about that, there were a couple things that came to mind. And one is, and I got this quote out of an article in the New Yorker, which I never think of as a Buddhist scripture, and obviously it's not, but it does have a lot of good things in it. And this is the quote, extending sympathy to those who stand in our way. And I thought, isn't that interesting? Because I could interpret that as extending sympathy to those who think differently than I do, extending sympathy to those who have a different opinion about how something should be done. And it went further than that. Because I was sitting in my room so much of the time, I listened a little bit more to NPR, and at that time, the political conventions were going on. And I did listen to a few speeches, and then I turned it off. And then I thought, one, this is not something I want to fill my mind with on either side of the political spectrum. But I also realized that sitting there, I was forming these critical opinions about various people that were at the convention. And I thought, I don't want to do that. And I thought, how can I not do that? How can I not? The brain just does it. I mean, I was a political being before I came here, you know? And then it occurred to me I could transfer merit to that person, and I could offer my sincere concern that they would be well and that what they would do would truly benefit others. And although that seemed a little far-fetched on some occasions, it really helped. It really helped me to dissolve that difference between what it appeared that person was thinking and saying and what I would think and say, which didn't make any difference at all. I wasn't there. And so I really liked the idea of extending sympathy to those who stand in our way. And I thought that's a wonderful way to look at doing good for others. The other thing that that came up for me is that we look at doing good with whatever we have, whatever is there for us to use. Now, in the Kyochu Kaimen, we're talking about doing good for others. Reverend Master Chiyu says, I must think carefully of my every act. I may not cause another to make a mistake in Buddhism. For by so doing, we rescue both ourselves and others. For in cutting the roots of karma for ourselves, we cut the roots of karma for others also. These three are called the three pure precepts, and without them, one cannot live the Buddhist life. So as Buddhists, I think we need to take this quite seriously. I thought to myself, okay, well, you know, my wrist is an arm or getting more mobility, and I'm going to be, quote, out in the monastery pretty soon with all of these, quote, distractions. What can I do to keep myself focused on the three refuges and the three treasures? And one of the things that I found was helpful is reciting our bodhisattva vows in the morning. You know, as monks, we recite our Kesa verse in the morning, but you can recite anything at all that helps you. You can recite the three refuges. You know, get up out of bed in the morning. You know, I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. You know, when you go to bed at night, you know, how do we prepare ourselves for sleep? Well, there are different ways to do it. I used to do it with a glass of wine, but that's not working anymore. But I found that by saying, you know, I take refuge in the Buddha. My refuge is the Buddha. My refuge is the Dharma. My refuge is the Sangha. And in the morning, thinking about what can I do today to really put the pure precepts into practice? How may I cease from evil? How may I do good? How may I do good for others? And in the evening, taking a few moments to just reflect a little bit, you know, how did I do during that conversation? How did I do in writing that email? How did I do in that telephone call? I think that we look at whatever is going to help us dissolve the self, because that's what it's all about. And that our inspiration to do good for others comes often both from our Buddhist practice, from our meditation and precepts, from reading the Buddhist teachings, but it also comes, if you look at the world, you can either focus on the terror and hostility and destruction and despair, or you can focus on things that people are doing in order to make the world a better place. When I was out at the same hermitage, but 2 years before, and it was cold, and, you know, we had a wood stove, and so I was tearing up newspaper, and I came across this lovely article in the San Francisco Chronicle. I'm sorry I can't pass it around so you all could see the photographs, but I'm going to read a paragraph to you. This was August 2014. In one of the noisiest, windiest stretches of concrete in San Francisco, a young man with a big red heart in his hand has been dancing joyously twice a week for more than a year just to make people happy. It works. And if anyone could use a little cheering up, it's this guy's audience. He dances for the miserable river of souls grinding their way along Highway 101 during the afternoon commute. Every Thursday and Friday, from 3 to about 6 p.m., all drivers have to do is gaze up, as they pass under the pedestrian bridge that crosses the freeway at 18th Street. And there they will see Javon Hatfield prancing, spinning, and beaming as he taps out spiffy steps and waves his 2-foot-wide foam heart in the air. The effect on the noisy mess below is electric. Within 10 seconds after, and don't forget, people are creeping along at a very, very slow pace. Within 10 seconds after he takes up his post, the honking starts, and then the waves, and then the peace signs, and happy shouts, dimly filtering up from the roar of the traffic. And when he was asked, it's a long article. He's 22 years old. He works as a youth counselor at a group home in the south end of town. And And so on those 2 days, he takes a bus, he goes to this freeway overpass and dances. And he said, "It's such a great energy you get from all the people, such a good vibe," he said between dance sets, the bridge's ever-present stiff breeze rustling his neatly trimmed small afro. "This is something so simple, but it can do so much to make someone's day. It makes my day." So think about what's happened to you when you're able to dissolve that self, when you're able to really offer generosity and kindness. Doesn't it make you feel good? It makes other people feel good. I think it makes us feel good. And I'm going to close with another quote, which a good friend sent me. I thought it was wonderful Buddhist teaching until I looked at the author, who was a Jewish rabbi. But it says, "I get up, I walk, I fall down. Meanwhile, I keep dancing." So I think we have to look at our practice as this is our dance. This is what we offer to life, no matter what happens to us. And then no matter is when you can put the self aside and you really, truly become one with the universe. There are no more barriers between you and the next person. So I had this on my altar for a couple of months. Now I'm going to move it to my bulletin board. But I'm going to keep looking at it. I get up, I walk, I fall down. Meanwhile, I keep dancing. So maybe we all keep dancing. Thank you all for coming.